Ladies and gentlemen, a few months ago, I gave you a good travel tip, which was that Southern California was putting on what I thought was an absolutely spectacular road repair festival, a festival of street repair in which virtually every paved thoroughfare in the greater Los Angeles area was being worked on at the same time. And they say we don't walk in Southern California. Well, here's just a little follow-up. Those few streets that they weren't repairing at the time, they found them, and they've opened those up too. So make your wintertime travel plans now for the even grander Los Angeles Street Repair Festival going on apparently through eternity. Just making it, in case you're looking at that weather map, and I could forgive you for looking at that weather map right about now and saying, gee, did you see that Rose Parade? All right, aside from the ongoing Greater Los Angeles Street Repair Festival, for which literally there is no end in sight. They're digging it up and not putting it back. How about that? But there's also, as you know, the ongoing California power crisis. I've talked about that a little bit on this broadcast. Apparently, somebody miscalculated when they deregulated the electric power industry. Somebody forgot to say, hey, you know, no matter how high the price goes, demand won't go down because it's electricity. So it's not a real market. Somebody forgot to say that. So right now, the prices for wholesale power are sky high because the wholesalers read the market correctly. We could put the price at $4 million a megawatt hour and they'd have to pay because it's electricity. What are they going to do? Light candles and walk? I don't think so. So we're slogging through that. The state of California is now proposing, here's a new one, state-built, state-owned electric plants that would sell electricity at cost. What is this, the 30s? And as if that's not enough, in the home of the homeless, at least in parts of the home of the homeless, tomorrow, residents have gotten the word, the water will be turned off. So you can't drive, the lights are out, and the water's off. But the sun is shining. Hello, welcome to the show.
Jenny. 真的的呀梦里的没是真的的呀梦里的没是真的的呀梦里的你我一点都没风烟都没烟都飞烟都没
attracted me. No love thoughts worried or distracted me. My disposition kept exempting me until you started in preempting me. And all this while you've really been tempting me. Maybe you can tell me what we ought to do. Now that you've got me going, what you gonna do? Is it up to me? Is it up to you? What kind of game is this we've begun? Was it done just for fun? We have met till I'm wrecked. Won't you tell me what you expect? Is this to be a case of kiss and never tell? Folly and farewell, heaven or maybe hell, Which is it going to be, love or gin, wife or sin? Let's begin. We have necked till I'm wrecked. Won't you tell me what you expect? Is this to be a case of kiss and never tell? Folly and farewell, heaven or maybe hell? Which is it going to be, love or gin, wife or sin? Let's begin.
All right, it's supposedly another year, according to some folks, so let's begin another calendar's worth of Le Shows. Hi, I'm Harry Shearer from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm sorry. When I encounter a knob that doesn't work, I get startled for a moment. And then I remember where I am. Where am I? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Saddam Hussein has had a major stroke and may even be dead. That was a report earlier this week from Egyptian security sources. Later indications were that he's alive and didn't have a stroke. So much for Egyptian security. So when you want to be protected, and you want to know what's coming in the future, rely on Egyptian security sources, won't you? For your the Iraqi dictator, this was the earlier report, had not been seen since a New Year's Day parade, when he was shown on Iraqi TV firing his gun into the air. Doesn't he know those bullets come down? Doesn't he see the public service announcements? What is he, a Detroiter? I didn't say traitor, I said Detroiter. What's the matter with the guy? He is nuts, firing a gun in the air on New Year's Eve. No wonder he had a stroke. He didn't have a stroke. That was Egyptian security had a stroke. Okay. Let's review. There is a something on its way to us, thanks to the digital wonder. I'll get to the digital wonderland in a minute. There is politics to discuss. It's a little trivial, you know. It's like the objections of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Hey, so the election got stolen. Who cares? Not one senator. Did you see that yesterday? Not one senator would sign on to the objection to the Florida stuff. So just the members of the Congressional Black Caucus trooped to the dais and had to be gaveled down by Al Gore. There's a thankless job. Anyway, the controversy now begins on some of the Bush nominees for the cabinet. If you want a thorough handicapping of each nominee's potential for a good, solid borking, I give you that in today's Week in Review section of the New York Times. So I send you there, and I call you back. Because now let's get to the digital wonderland that awaits us. In the final version of, this is from Inside Magazine, in the final version of Hollywood's proposal to prevent the Napsterization of television, there's a surprise mention of something politely referred to as an obliteration application aimed at heading off the digital theft of TV shows and movies. This code would sit in the guts of your digital TV or set-top box and would essentially eat up any bit of programming deemed off-limits. I think I read you something about this a couple of weeks ago. Here's more detail about it. Spooked by what's happened to the music industry. Ooh, yeah, they're not making enough money. Movie and TV executives have vowed an aggressive campaign to prevent a repeat on their turf, and they appear to have won the latest round, despite a pitched battle from consumer electronics companies who fear that curbs on what people can watch will hurt sales of digital TVs. That's right, just one more reason not to buy a digital television. The FCC has blessed the idea for a device to regulate what people watch and copy. And last month, the industry trade group submitted its final proposal on the new system. The results, when people switch to digital TVs, if they ever do, you've been warned. It's not just that they won't be able to create infinite perfect copies of movies and television shows to bootleg or trade for free on the internet. That's the nightmare scenario we're supposed to be afraid of. Under the new rules, we will not be able to make a copy on the Den TV and then play it in the bedroom or take the tape over to a friend's house. It's like region coding for DVDs only inside your own home, ladies and gentlemen. Hello? The middleman, Cable Lab, submitted its final proposal to the FCC last month. But now the Consumer Electronics Association, which represents manufacturers, is asking the FCC to make the document available for public comment. Oh, yeah, make it public, why don't you? Oh, I see. It's because this is the United States of Clavin. The trade group has a list of complaints about as long as the specs themselves. The biggest beef is that consumers, already wary of buying expensive new digital TVs, I wonder why, will be less inclined if they think they won't have any control over what they can record. You see, we thought we won that right in the Supreme Court in the Betamax case in 1984, which gave home recorders the right to tape what we want for our personal use. Well, kiss it goodbye. Here's the proposed specifications. If an incoming signal doesn't hit a copy protection device, you'll get static. If you have a device in your TV, but you try to tape a show to a tape machine that doesn't have the device, it will not compute. If a show is designated as copy never, and you try to tape it on any kind of device, it will not. If you record a copy once program to your TiVo, let's say, and then want to transfer it to a VCR, it will not do that. If you want to send a signal to a device with a CD burner in it, it won't go there. If you want to copy a digital recording onto the internet or your computer, that won't happen. If you want to watch a high-definition TV program, assuming there ever are any, on an analog TV set, the signal will be downgraded. Well, we knew that. And if you make a copy on one machine and want to play it on another, it won't play. How convenient. Left unresolved in all of this is the critical issue of who decides what shows get obliterated, which ones can never be copied, and which ones can be copied as many times as people want. Let me guess. Michael Eisner. Rupert Murdoch. I want them deciding what I can record in the privacy of my own place. The consumer electronics industry says it is willing to go to court. The entertainment companies pledged months ago that the only things that would be designated copy never would be pay-per-view or video on demand movies. They have since moved the bar. They now want copy once designation on all cable programming. And ABC and Fox also want that copy once designation on over the air programming, on free TV, so called. Copy it once. You could never move it to another machine. Thank you so much, the entertainment industry. It's digital, ladies and gentlemen. They can do that. But you don't have to buy a digital TV. It all stops, you see. You get it. Don't you? Do you get it? Speaking of free TV, CBS and NBC's news divisions have said they will change their election coverage due to the confusion over November's presidential vote in Florida. After a 5-week investigation, that's longer than they spend doing a piece for 60 Minutes. CBS said it would implement more than a dozen changes in its election coverage, including how races are called, fuller disclosure of how projections are made, and a re-examination of the dependence on voter news service. NBC, in its summary of its review, focused on voter news service, VNS, saying its system needs improvement, especially in research and exit polling. CBS said it was now prepared to be second or even last and would make a virtue of its patience and determination to be accurate. CBS vowed in an 87-page report to learn from the mistakes made during this election. They will assign a CBS News senior manager to head the network's decision desk. They haven't had one? Who's been running that desk? the interns? They will assign a correspondent to staff the desk. Excellent. The desk will be staffed. And the desk will be moved into the television studio, so they'll have enough light and powder. No state's results will be projected until all the polls have closed in that state. CBS also continues to support a bill in Congress that would mandate a uniform nationwide poll closing time. So polls should be open till, what, 11 in the East? Just so CBS doesn't screw up? Higher standards of certainty for calling close races. Higher standards of certainty. Am I missing something there? Is certainty not sort of an absolute concept? Higher standards of certainty. More nearly certainty. Closer to certainty. Too close to certainty. And a new category of leaning to indicate a candidate is ahead, as well as a use of multiple sources in checking vote tallies. Well, there goes the money you saved on the voter news service if you're going to use multiple sources. Ugh. That budget is going to be better on-air explanations of exit polls and how projections are made, with greater emphasis placed on the fact that data is based on projections and estimates. And CBS will either invest in fixing the problems with voter news service or help develop a new service to perform the functions of that consortium. Both networks criticized VNS, where in one case a key punch operator entered the wrong numbers for one Florida county. NBC says it needs to use additional sources for tabulated votes as well. So I guess those budget savings that they made in 1990 will be reversed now. Ladies and gentlemen, again, it's in our hands. We could fix this. We don't need CBS and NBC to fix it. You don't need exit polls to be explained to you as based on estimates and projections. If when you leave the polls, you keep your choices a secret. It's a secret ballot. Why don't you keep it secret all the way home? Without exit polls, they'd have to sit there like the rest of us and wait till the polls close, wouldn't they? No. They could still make mischief, but not the same kind of mischief. Newer, better mischief. That's all I want, ladies and gentlemen. And it's a new year. We're entitled to that.
She was the kind of girl who carried on with most men who were married. She loved all the storm and the drama. She liked how they couldn't own her, only harm her. And she fell hook, line, and sinker, a racehorse running with blinkers. And of course he was a stinker. She didn't find out till the honeymoon. She asked him, who's that girl in the picture? Step behind her to scare her, to dare her. deserve you, but who loves you when I'm not home? Oh, you're a kingdom of sanctity, church of our vanities.
Forward, a compressed look at the always-changing computer universe and audio data dump on the wired world and the wireless. I'm Siobhan Navarro. Ever since the dawn of eBay, collectibles have been a big part of internet life. But now parts of the internet itself have become collectible, thanks to Jared Cole.
I had what I thought was this really dumb hobby. I just saved screenshots of every website I visited. And, you know, I was a web junkie supreme, so I browsed everything everywhere. I was the first person anywhere to save the homepage of hatsofmeat.com. Now, it's one of my biggest sellers, and they're still online.
Just after the dot-com shakeout started, Cole began making high-quality prints of his screenshots, framing them, and selling them as collectibles, often making more money than the sites he memorialized.
I know I made more selling full-size screenshots of the pets.com homepage than that Pets.com ever made, and I'd never had to buy a single ad on the Super Bowl.
More than 20,000 newly defined websites will never be seen again, except by nostalgic webheads who buy Jared Cole's collectible souvenirs of early internet life.
It's like our future became our past at internet speed, which I guess is only fair.
Next time, life in the layoff lane on Fast Forward. I'm Siobhan Navarro.
Amsterdam creeps into my PC. After a long hard day selling pornography, he likes to come home and talk to me. Oh goody, he's got his mind on the job, got his technological props. Oops, another file on the email. Oh, 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 oh.
This is Le Show from the Edge of America, and you know, there's a lot of good reasons to go into the armed forces of your country, but these syndromes keep happening to people who go into the armed forces of their country. Now there's Balkan, you heard about Gulf War syndrome for years, now comes Balkan War syndrome. The president of the European Commission, Romano Prodi, has demanded to know the truth behind claims that depleted uranium used in NATO weapons caused death or illness among European troops keeping the peace in Kosovo and Bosnia. Several European nations echoed the concerns, intensifying pressure on NATO to investigate. The NATO-led Stabilization Force, S4, dismisses the claim, saying ammunition with depleted uranium used during the 1992-95 war there posed only a negligible hazard. I think it's time for the drink test again. Let's get some guys from NATO and have them drink some depleted uranium. Or just sit on a uranium-tipped missile for a while. The syndrome came under the spotlight following reports that six Italian soldiers who served in the former Yugoslavia had developed leukemia and died after exposure to spent ammunition. That could happen to anybody. France became the latest country to announce it was conducting its own inquiry into the syndrome after four of its Balkan veterans contracted leukemia. That could happen to anybody else, too. France noted that as yet no link to spent ammunition was apparent. Depleted uranium is used in the tips of missiles, shells, and bullets to increase their ability to penetrate armor and can be pulverized on impact into a toxic radioactive dust. That's worth it. It'll penetrate some armor, but it'll spread some toxic dust. Ladies and gentlemen, all life is trade-offs. Do you want to penetrate armor? Come on. Think seriously about this now. The Italian President Prodi said even if there were the slightest risk from the munitions, they should be abolished. That's why the Italian army fights the way it does. NATO spokesman Mark Laity ruled out any immediate plans to destroy stocks of depleted uranium munitions. The onus is on those who call ill health to prove it, rather than on us who don't. I'd hate to be in an eighth grade class, English class, trying to diagram that sentence. The sentence, again, from NATO spokesman Mark Laity is, quote, "The onus is on those who call ill health to prove it, rather than on us who don't." He continued, "If things change, NATO will change." I'm telling you, have somebody from NATO sit on those uranium-tipped missiles for a while, or just sniff some dust. Drink a beaker full of liquefied dust. That's all I ask. It always works. Ladies and gentlemen, a sad, sad story this week. Apparently, the death of entertainer Steve Allen was not due to a heart attack. It was due to an auto accident that he sustained, minor accident where an SUV pulled out of a driveway into him and caused the rupturing of a blood vessel which filled the sac around his heart with blood. It's not nice. Anyway, not as sad as that, but you want your best work to be the stuff that people remember, I think. And so it saddened me when, in tribute to Steve Allen when he passed on late last year, our local public TV station played 17 hours of the meeting of the minds. One dares say that Steve Allen will be remembered primarily for injecting mainstream television with spontaneity, wit, and silliness in about equal measures. And let's try to remember him for that if we can.
Thank goodness that you got a cerebellum. If they ask you just what is it, well, you tell them. If you didn't have one, you would surely lie there till the buzzards came along and said, oh, hi there. When you were a baby, your cerebellum helped you to learn to crawl, then later to stand up, to walk, and to run. It remembers all the separate little parts of these movements for you so that you can do them while thinking of something else. Thank goodness that you've got a cerebellum. If they ask you just what is it, well, you tell them. If you didn't have one, you would surely lie there till the buzzards came along and said, oh, hi there.
Chuck, what is this thing on top of the microphone?
It's a windscreen to keep you from popping.
I don't. What do you mean I pop?
Everybody pops.
I don't pop.
All right.
From the newest, hottest, most fabulous inn, restaurant, in and for and about the city of Beverly Hills, a place which we think is just going to be at the top of everyone's list of places you cannot possibly get into, the Zone Zone, a restaurant featuring a very popular regimen of eating for the woman who wants to say, yes, I do not share the craziness of a Calista Flockhart or of a whoever, but I still want to look my best. From the always available banquet room of the Zone Zone, this is Strictly from Blackwell. I am Blackwell, and it is a happy and an unhappy new year. And we take both because both are given to us. The Grammy Award nominations came out this week. And if you want to know whatever happened to glamour, so do I. I mean, forget about Cher, forget about Bette Midler, forget about a Barry Manilow or Peter Allen. Anyone with a drop of class is gone from the Grammys. And instead we have this young man from Detroit, Michigan, a white lower class boy who changed his name, and man, can I identify with that. So we do not have a problem in that department, Mr. Eminem. It's just in 55 years of show business, never once did I have to stoop to saying I wanted to kill my mother. We have good conversation today about the future, about the wonderful world of the future that is lying straight, we hope, ahead. A magician, we call him, with a laser, with a knife, with any kind of a guided blade to just re-sculpt and reimagine and re-fashion, which is the word we love. He refashions your look
like
for a better you.
Thank you.
But not only, Dr. Rudy Gansch is not only one of the great plastic cosmetic surgeons.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
That's all right.
In the city of Beverly Hills. He is also a licensed psychic. Dr. Gansch, It is a wondrous pair of gifts you bring. Yeah. Thank you for sharing them with us.
Well, thank you for asking me to share them, Mr. Blackwell.
Yeah, well,
you know,
Dr. Gansch,
yes.
When a person comes to you for a procedure,
Let's
call it,
yeah,
and you can actually see into the future and tell them with not only medical certainty, but psychic certainty, how it is going to look.
That's right.
Is this not true?
Oh, yes. That is, and it's a gift. Study the medical side of this.
Of course.
And from time to time I did.
Of course. You have to.
The gift is just that. It comes to you, and all of a sudden, you know, I can touch a sensitive spot on a patient's
hand,
for example,
and
get a reading on what what's going to happen to that turkey neck. And 99 times out of 1,000, there it is. Right
there.
Yeah.
And this is what we ask you to bring now to a look ahead, because we have a new first lady.
Oh,
we have a new style in Washington, D.C.
Well,
so-called.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rudy, you know, you and I have talked about this over many, many plate of veal.
Yes, we have, Mr. Blackwell. You know, style today is in the hands of the beholder.
Interesting.
Thereby lies the crime.
Interesting. You see?
But what we're seeing now is a return to... what you might call small town, big city look.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what they have to live. That's going to be high style. That is going to be high style.
Sure. There hangs the tale right there.
You got it.
Small town, big city, which we had not thought of as a concept.
Well.
But it does fit the shoe.
Yeah.
It is basically, Michael Faircloth is the designer.
I saw that,
Laura Bush's day suit
and
evening gown.
That's right.
For inaugural day.
Wow.
And the designs were released this week, as you know, Rudy. And it's Michael Faircloth. He changed his name, I'm sure.
You know.
But I don't hold that against him. I have that in common with so many in the business.
Don't look at me.
But Rudy... Is this compassionate conservatism?
Well,
in an evening gown and a day suit, or is it just, I don't know, retro?
Look, it's these are throwbacks. There's no doubt. They're self-conscious throwbacks, and that's the both their curse and their blessing.
It goes both ways.
This is the statement she wants to make. We have this to look forward to.
Yeah,
and when it's over, we'll have it to look backward to.
Rudy, you put it in words in the way that I wish I could put it in words. Lainey Cohane is joining us. She's been here all along, just sitting silently like a rose waiting to open. She, speaking of roses, is fragrance editor of the magazine O-E-A-U, isn't it, Lainey?
Yes,
although
it is.
I wouldn't know. I'm a second grade kicker, so it could be O-H or O or Ow or whatever.
No, it's O.
Lainey, we've never had you before. Please don't make this the first time. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I have to say, though, I'm not the, although I appreciate the compliment, I'm not the fragrance editor.
No.
I run the fragrance desk.
Okay, good.
But as I like to say, if it makes a stink, I'm on top of it.
That is outrageous.
Thank you.
Which is why we love you. Talk to me about Laura Bush. Do we like her style?
Uh-huh.
What do we think will be her fragrance of choice on inauguration night?
Oh, that is such a tough question because, you know, Mr. Blackwell, although, as you said, the fashion releases, we know what she's wearing in terms of garments and fabrics
and so
forth.
Yeah.
We have no idea what her taste in fragrances is.
I'm
trying to lead the charge in a way to get fragrance journalism put on a par with fashion journalism.
Right there on the pedestal.
We're tired of riding in the back seat of the bus, as it were.
Absolutely.
But there is exciting news, and I did want to share some of it with you.
Please.
And because Rosie O'Donnell is coming out with her fragrance this year, which we are very excited about.
No.
Yes.
Say this is not true.
No.
Because what is the dominant note in a Rosie O'Donnell fragrance?
All right, fair question. The dominant note is a woodsy note. But there are also some bubblegum notes in there.
Okay, this is what we feel.
Oh, Mr.
But, okay, Lainey, talk to me about Laura Bush.
Okay.
What do we feel? A red gown, a blue suit.
Yeah.
Have we not seen this before?
Oh.
Did we not see her mother-in-law wear a blue?
That's very fair.
Throughout her first lady career.
Yes.
Is this now to be the first lady color?
Well, it might be, as long as the first lady's named Bush. She used to wear very... very muted colors.
Very
and I think Laura Bush is still coming out in a color sense.
Okay, good.
I think she's still learning to wear the palette and not let it wear her.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, but
don't
look.
You feel?
No, Lainey, look. Mm? We are coming out of 8 years where there was no fashion sense, where the fashion sense in the White House was which hair style should I wear today?
Well, yes.
And designers could go hang.
Mm-hmm. And fragrance.
And now... Mm-hmm. We are seeing that the small, what did you call it?
The small town, big city
look.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, queen of the mall. I mean, what has he designed these things for? You know, the oil club.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is this to be the fashion statement of the most powerful country on the face of the earth?
Mr. Blackwell, if I may, I don't know if you're addressing that question to me, I'd like to field it if I could.
Please feel it.
I think we're beyond a time where the First Lady sets the table of fashion.
Interesting.
Many people have taken that on, whether they be the young kids with the safety pins of the whatever, or...
wherever they put them. I know.
An icon.
Sure.
Like a Cher. Who, by the way, I did a reading on. She is going to look so great in a couple of years.
This is such
you will not believe it.
This is such good news.
But the First Lady's role is basically less symbolic and yet...
Mr. Blackwell, I just think that
Lainey.
One thing that Hillary could do in her new guise as a senator it would be to make a point of it in her press relations every day to let us know what fragrance she's wearing. It would be such a shot, you know, with the economy where it is now. It'd be such a shot in the arm for the fragrance industry, and it would, I think,
that'd be great for all of us.
Bring a whole new level of attention to her.
Yeah,
that I don't think would be unwelcome.
Interesting. I think it would be great for all of us who care about glamour and class, and the things that are remembered because we remember the Barbara Bush's blue dress. We don't remember really what she did. We remember maybe Eisenhower's bangs. We don't remember who she was. This, I think, is something we need to learn. But the clock we need to learn has said goodbye to us, and so we must say goodbye to you from the banquet room of the Zone Zone. Thank you so much, Dr. Rudy, a magician with everything sharp. And Lainey Cohen, please, please find your way back here again. Next time, Resort Wear, 2001. A fashion oddity. Till then, strictly from Blackwell. Bye-bye.
amor não vai parar de rolar, de fugir e seguir como um rio, como uma pedra que divide o rio. Me diga coisas bonitas. O nosso amor não vai olhar para trás, desencantar, nem ser tema de livro. A vida inteira eu quis um verso simples pra transformar o que eu digo. Rimas fáceis, calafrios, por o dedo faz um pacto comigo. Num segundo teu, no meu, por um segundo mais feliz. Ah, o nosso amor não vai olhar para trás, desencantar, nem ser tema de livro. A vida inteira eu quis um verso simples pra transformar o que eu digo. Rimas fáceis, calafrios, por o dedo faz um pacto comigo. Num segundo teu, no meu, por um segundo mais feliz. Ah, é. Nosso amor não vai parar de rolar, de fugir e seguir como um rio, como uma pedra que divide o rio. Me diga coisas bonitas, rimas fáceis,
and this just in, ladies and gentlemen, according to a Scottish newspaper, the ex-director of the Pentagon's depleted uranium project, Professor Doug Rockey, says the United States and Britain have covered up the hazards of depleted uranium, despite the rising death toll among European troops who fought in the Gulf. Professor Rockey himself suffers reactive airway disease, neurological damage, and kidney problems. Depleted uranium, he says, is the stuff of nightmares. It is toxic, radioactive, and pollutes for 4,500 million years. It causes lymphoma, neuropsychotic disorders, and short-term memory damage. And lymphoma. In semen, it causes birth defects and trashes the immune system. The United States and Britain disregarded health and safety and the environment by their use of depleted uranium. But it does, ladies and gentlemen, help to penetrate armor. So let's keep everything in perspective, if we please can. We'll be right back. dedicated to better armor penetration. This is Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network. Keep away from that stuff, boys. And on your computer, oh, and on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, boys and girls. And on your computer whenever you want it at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like, oh, I don't know, Donald Rumsfeld drinking a glass of the stuff, if you'd agree to join with me next week, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.